Mrajuhtuden.
Mrajuhtuden.
Welcome to the Anonymous Eskimo Project, a program where I have candid conversations with guests about difficult but important Indigenous topics such as mental health, sobriety, recovery, and missing and murdered Indigenous people. These difficult topics need to be brought to the light, not only to educate, but to uplift our Indigenous relatives. Oyana, for joining me, I'm your host, Ralph Sara. On today's show, I have Kendra Cutley Kloster, Tlingit Raven Kiksadi from Wrangell and Juneau, Alaska. She currently serves as a co-director for law and policy at the Alaska Native Women's Resource Center and a partner with the MMIWG2S Alaska Working Group. She wears multiple hats in her life and community work. Being a mother to her three children is her favorite role in life. Her kids and our beautiful Alaskan communities inspire her every day to continue to do this important heart work and hope that soon everybody will be free from violence and be well in living traditional ways of life. So guys, please help me welcome Kendra Kloster. Hi, Kendra. How are you?
Thanks for having me.
Yes. I wanted to have you on because I saw a post by Native Movement. It had you on it, and it was about Alaska Senate Bill 151 being passed.
Yes, we are very excited to see that bill go through. It's our first MMIP bill that's passed the Alaska legislature. So a pretty big deal for us right now.
Definitely. Before we get into SB 151, can you go ahead and introduce yourself and give us your story?
Yeah, sounds great. So Kendra Kloster, I am Tlingit Raven Kiksadi. My Tlingit name is Kathlet that I got from my grandmother. I am originally from Wrangell and Juneau, though I live here in Dena'ina Lands in Anchorage right now, where I'm raising my three children. I come with a little bit of a policy background. I call myself a policy nerd. I spent some time in the U.S. Senate with Senator Stevens after I graduated, and then moved to the Alaska legislature, where I spent 10 years. And then I moved over to the Indigenous nonprofit world, where I currently work with the Alaska Native Women's Resource Center as their co-director for law and policy.
Okay, so you have experience in the legislature, and how did you get into that? Was it because of close-up?
Actually, that was one of the reasons for sure. When I was 17, I actually traveled out to Washington, D.C. in the close-up program, and I don't know, I just really grew to love policy, but I also saw the impact that you can have through policy. And so I just kind of found my area that I loved and my niche, and just really tried to grow in the knowledge over it over the years. And so that was one of the reasons, you know, I became a staff member in the legislature. I found myself watching the floor sessions, weird or not, but I was watching floor sessions and just seeing what was happening, and I decided maybe I just need to work over there since I'm watching it so much.
Yeah. Did this give you a little upper hand on presenting this MMIW G2S bill?
Yeah, for sure. You know, when doing trying to pass bills through the legislature, it's helpful to have that background. Just knowing the process and how it all works and who you need to talk to and how to, you know, get letters in and public testimony and how to work through amendment processes. I mean, all of it is super helpful. And I really try to be, you know, a resource to, you know, for friends and family, relatives, and, you know, other nonprofits that are trying to maneuver through this kind of policy world, because it can be daunting if you have not been involved there and kind of know where to start.
Oh my gosh, yeah, I can't imagine, you know, somebody like just me, like, oh, you always say, you know, you can call in to your legislatures or whatever. I'm like, oh, not me. I don't know how to do that or where to start. You know, I'm sure a lot of native people, you know, out in rural, even in Anchorage, are like, see that as like, you know, that's not what I do. Kind of thing, you know.
Yeah, I understand. It can be overwhelming and it can be hard, I think, to first get into it of, you know, calling your senator representative. You know, I can understand that perspective from folks, and that's why I also try to talk to a lot of people about it, and try to, you know, take away that almost that fear or that thought that you can't make a difference, because you really can. And I know my time when working in the legislature, it really made a difference when people were calling in, you know, especially on like a bill or something like that that's going through to hear about what's good about it, what's bad about it. And there are pieces that have definitely come up from the public that that can make you pause and think, because sometimes you're just going along and people from, you know, different walks of life can bring you a different perspective that you didn't think about. And that's really important in policy, especially when you're making these state laws, because sometimes you have to go back and fix it if you don't realize all the ramifications that it could have. So it's really important. And so I understand that can be definitely hard. And so I try to really talk with people through that process, and maybe just knowing about it might be able to, you know, get people to engage in that way if you kind of break it down.
Yeah, and I'm so glad that you came on here to, you know, talk about this, because most of my listeners are Native Indigenous people, and by you just talking about it, explaining about things, you know, it kind of, I hope that it kind of takes the fear away a little bit.
Well, I'm always happy to talk with folks about it and even answer, you know, kind of questions one on one. I've had friends just reach out and say, "Can we just have coffee and walk me through the process?" And I'm
Yeah.
always glad to do that. It's just, you know, again, it's a way that we can make our voices heard and make change. And it's just one of the many different ways that I think getting involved, and especially, you know, getting our tribal voices, our Alaska Native voices through this process, it's just really important to me.
Yeah, definitely. With Senate Bill 151 passing, can you help us understand exactly what that means?
Yeah, and I want to just talk a little bit how we got to this point too. So Senate Bill 151, which is our Missing and Murdered Indigenous Persons Bill, we really, and when I say we, I mean I work with a lot of folks. We created this MMIWG2S Alaska Working Group, which has five Alaska Native organizations involved. And so when we started this group in 2018, it was really out of community coming forward and talking about, you know, the needs and this crisis that's coming in our state. And it was really helpful when we had the Urban Indian Health Institute release that report in 2018, which is showing Alaska, you know, some having some of the highest rates of missing and murdered Indigenous women across the nation. And it really called to us of we need to do something about it. So we listened, talked with our communities, and figured out what is it that we need to do. So within this working group, we address things like policy, but also healing, wellness, awareness, and education. We really, and data as well. So we really try to attack the MMIP crisis from every front. And so in that regard, and that's kind of how Senate Bill 151 came about, is hearing what are those loopholes, what's happening in our state, and what can we do to address it. So within this bill is solidifying our MMIP investigators. A couple years ago, we were able to get funding through the budget, and that was working with the Commissioner of Public Safety, Commissioner Cockrell, and we were able to get some funding in the budget to have MMIP investigators. And so that they've been working really hard and making really, you know, good headway through some of these cases. And really, they're the unsolved cases right now that they're working through. And so this bill solidifies two of those positions in statute. We currently have funding for four, so there are four MMIP investigators. And the other pieces to it is we heard a lot from our communities about, you know, the interaction between law enforcement and them really not understanding maybe the culture and rural Alaska. And so we've had those ongoing conversations with our communities, but with the commissioner as well and other folks within public safety. And so within this bill, it also includes mandatory cultural training from an Indigenous organization that goes for our law enforcement. So that's the second piece to it. Another piece to this bill is an MMIP review commission, and that's looking back at the cases. And so this isn't your normal kind of commission where it's like a big public commission. It's an internal one where you're looking at these cases and how they've been handled, what are the resources, what's, you know, finding what was done well, what was done bad, what needs to be improved. And so we can really build out better ways to be, to investigate our MMIP cases. And then from that is also we're getting an external report. This is another piece of the bill, is what is it that we need to be able to support, really support these cases moving forward and getting done. What is it in our state that we're missing? What's in law enforcement that's missing? So essentially what this is saying is we will need a report to be done on the resources that we have. What is it that we're missing? What do we need to have done? And having this kind of full report. And when I talked with the commissioner, just I think like last week, I said, you know, what's the plan for this? And he says, well, we want to do a really good job. So we're going to get someone externally to come in and do a report for us. So they can really look at our departments. We can look at what we're doing good. What are the resources we need to ensure that we are investigating these cases and we have all the tools needed to do it and to do it better. So those are kind of the multiple pieces that are part of this bill and the law. So it passed the legislature and now we are just waiting for the governor to sign it.
Is there a chance that he won't sign this?
I mean, I guess there's always that chance, but I highly doubt it. You know, we've been working really closely with the commissioner. He's been very supportive. And, you know, it's something within that we have been talking about. And we talked with the governor even a couple years ago about creating this MMIP statewide commission. And that was done a couple years ago, which is actually where I sit on that commission. And it has since sunsetted, but it moved into a working group. So it's a statewide working group under the Department of Public Safety. So there has been some support from the administration and trying to, you know, do some of the things that we need to do. So I don't see why he wouldn't sign it.
Why did this take so long? You know, why did the numbers have to rise so high before the policymakers or lawmakers took notice?
That's a good question. You know, we've had this bill in the legislature for the last few years, actually. This has been a continuing educating issue that we've gone down to talk with our legislators about, to talk to the governor about. And when we started, even back in like 2018, it did not get the momentum. What was really helpful is coming out with the data, to be honest, to say, like, here's the numbers, because we could say, right, in our Indigenous communities, we've known for a long time that this has been an issue. Mm-hmm. You talk to our, you know, you talk to your friends, you talk to your family, and we can name a number of people just off the top of our head that have been missing or have been murdered. But having that really specific data was really important. And so with that Urban Indian Health Institute report and then Data for Indigenous Justice released a report as well. And then we could go to our policymakers and say, look, like, we can tell you the stories, but now you see the data, and it's in front of you. And so it's a lot harder to ignore. So that's why the data piece is also really important. So, and why it took so long, I think, you know, policy actions, educating, awareness, it takes a long time, unfortunately, but I've really seen change in the last couple years. So it's just continuing that educating piece.
Yeah, it seems like it kind of moves at a snail's pace almost, you know, but it's getting noticed and it's getting done. So I applaud you guys for doing that. You and along with others testified before the Senate State Affairs Committee. Can you walk us through that? Because correct me if I'm wrong, this was the first hearing, right? And how did the policy and lawmakers respond to this hearing?
Yeah, so I'll give a little bit of background too and how we got to this piece. There was about 20 of us, and when I say us, from the five Alaska Native organizations that are involved in the working group, plus tribal leaders from across the state. We all flew down to Juneau in February. And so we flew down just to meet. We met with probably 90% of the legislators. We hosted a multiple series of lunch and learns. So in the Capitol building, they have lunch and learns where, you know, lawmakers and staff and whoever can come in and just get educated on certain things. So we did presentations on missing or Indigenous people. We did presentations on tribal sovereignty, on tribal justice, and just really trying to provide that information. And then while we were there, yes, they scheduled Senate Bill 151 in the Senate State Affairs Committee. And that was just a really beautiful moment because, you know, we were there, we were in the room, and people got up and testified for the first time ever. I think I've heard at least a couple people say it was the first time they've ever been in front of the legislature testifying, and they just had such beautiful words to share. And there were stories shared even for the first time in public about some of the, you know, violence that individuals have gone through, and they shared that with the committee. And to be there and to see that and being there as a group, I think just really made that impact. And you could just kind of see their kind of, you know, the legislators' faces, and just seeing them kind of take that in and take the information in. And hear from us directly and see us as we're sharing all of these stories about our loved ones and our relatives. And so it was really great. It was a really impactful moment, I think, to get the ball rolling and getting this done and getting this through. And I also want to say one of the really great moments too was when we started our kind of legislative fly-in. We flew in on a Monday, and we gathered outside the Capitol building with, you know, our regalia and with just people in the Juneau community and dance group. And we danced into the Capitol building and, you know, just sang our songs throughout there. And that's how we really made our entrance, is we want people to know that you're on Indigenous land, you're in Indigenous space, and we're here. And we are, you know, need to be listened to and understood and consulted. And there's a lot of issues that we need to address, and making sure our voices are heard. So it was a really good experience. And there was, like I said, there was many people that have never been, you know, advocating and educating in the legislature like that before. And so I had a lot of really good positive feedback. And they also, a lot of my friends and coworkers were like, wow, that was impressive. We did 3 days of like back-to-back meetings and presentations and lunch and learns. And we hosted a community reception and invited a bunch of people in. And we really crammed a lot in, but it was really important to do that. And I think that, you know, we really helped kind of to get through to people and understand that action needs to be taken now and we can't wait anymore.
Wow, so amazing. I mean, the pride and the feeling I bet you guys had, and it's so powerful, you know. I really want to thank you guys for going down there and doing that.
Yeah, well, thank you. And, you know, I get my fuel, and I really call this my heart work, you know, I get it from our community. I get it from my kids. This is not something that I want to see passed down, that any of us want to see passed. You know, we want to, how do we end this? How do we end the violence in our communities? How do we also deal with, you know, trauma and ensure the wellness? And so really it's our communities and our people and my family that just feel this work. So I'm just, you know, I'm happy to be a part of that and, you know, in any small or big way that I can.
Let's say somebody has been living under a rock and is just learning about MMIWG2S. What would you say to help them understand the crisis of MMIWG2S?
What I would start saying with is, you know, with MMIW, we as Indigenous people, you know, have experienced this really since colonization. And this was something that was brought in. And how are we looking at this as everybody needs to be a part of ensuring that Indigenous, but all Alaskans are safe and we can be safe in our home, safe in our communities. And we see the numbers now, right? We see the data out there where Alaska is one of the highest rates of missing and murdered Indigenous women across the nation. So we can show you that data. We can share our stories with you. But really what we need to look at is how are we going to address it by ensuring that we have public safety, but also how are we going to ensure that our communities are well? And that's really coming back to healing from trauma, looking at the wellness, and you know, just really getting rid of that violence that's happening within our communities, but understanding where it is coming from. You got to understand where the MMIW crisis has come from in order to really to understand how long that our communities have been dealing with this. And it's going to take everybody to come to the table. We need, you know, our community partners. We need our tribal leaders. We need federal, state, you know, everyone to really get involved because there is a federal trust responsibility to ensure that they are supporting our tribes and supporting our people. And so there's a number of things that I think that can be done. So I hope that answered your question. I know I kind of rattled off there a little bit, but it's just I think that there's so much that we can do. And everybody has a role. And by that I mean yourself just having, you know, having these conversations on podcasts, putting out that information is really important. Our artists have been so amazing in bringing this issue forward. If you look at things like the Alaska Daily Show, you know, where Vera and others were involved in how you're writing and sharing that information. If you look at the artwork that's been done to bring awareness to MMIW, that's so important, you know, and to policy and to data, everyone has really important things to bring to the table, and it takes all of us to really address that. And so it's just this is a policy is a piece of it, but we can all do something. And I just encourage others, you know, to if this isn't something that you've looked into, you know, things like Google searches, things like reaching out to friends and organizations to just, you know, hear about it and talk about it, I think is really important just to know, just having that information, I think is really important to have.
Yes, definitely. And I think my listeners to this podcast have experienced a lot of that trauma, you know, and that hurt, and can understand how important this crisis is, you know. But we also have to remember that we are strong and resilient too, you know, and that brings you guys out, you know, to fight for us out there. So we have to remember that too.
Yeah, and you know, something else I just want to share is, you know, a lot of this, like I say, is coming from our communities. Like, you know, when we come with these policy ideas, it's coming directly from our community. It's looking at, you know, what's been happening. And so where can we help address those gaps? What is it that we need to do? And so if there are things that someone has experienced or a community has, or you have an idea, I mean, you don't have, if you're not comfortable reaching out to legislators, reach out to, there's lots of organizations. There's Native Movement, there's Alaska Native Women's Resource Center, Alaska Native Justice Center. Reaching out to your tribal leader, just sharing your stories and information is so incredibly powerful. And so, again, you don't have to reach out directly to a policymaker, but we talk to a lot of different families, we talk to community members, and that's kind of how we get our things to move forward. And if anyone ever wanted to get involved too, I've also talked a lot of folks through, like, okay, this is how we do our public testimony, or writing a letter of support for something, or to share your story. And so it's been, there's lots of different ways, I think, to get involved. And like I said, artwork too has just been really beautiful. Because sometimes it's just, it's the educating, it's seeing it. There's just so many different things to do, but there's lots of folks that can make a difference. Everyone can make a difference in how you might want to use your skills. And I agree, addressing our healing and our trauma, and we're such strong, resilient people. So I'm glad you said that, because I 100% agree.
And that was my next question, was how can people participate and help? So I'm glad you came up with that. So you and Charlene Ukpik founded the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women, Girls, and Two-Spirit Alaska Working Group. Can you tell us your backstory on this and why it's so important to you?
Yeah, I think where I've started, I kind of mentioned my policy background. When I was in the legislature, I was really missing, seeing Native people in the Capitol building in that way. And like, how do we, and how are our policies being addressed? And how, why are we not consulting this? These questions would always come to me, like, why are we not consulting our tribes more from the state? Why don't we have these certain things? And then looking at like the high rates of domestic violence and sexual assault and these different things that are happening in our communities, it really bothered me, and then becoming a mom, just it really also changed me in so many profound ways of, wow, I don't want my babies to grow up in this. I don't want them to have that fear. I want them to be safe.
Everybody involved in doing all of this, as you put it, heart work, it is so important. And thank you, Kendra, for coming on here and taking the time and being out there for people. I really applaud you, and I really, really thank you, Koyana.
Goodness, cheese. Thank you.
Well, that's all for today's show. I hope you, the listeners, found some inspiration, strength, and hope. Listen next week when I have another strong, courageous person on who's walking with us on this healing journey. This program is available as a podcast. You can hear this and many more episodes wherever you listen to podcasts or at anonymouseskimo.com. Join in the Anonymous Eskimo Project Thursdays at 5:30 p.m. on 107.7 and also 91.9 FM KSTK, Stikeen River Radio, serving Wrangell, Alaska. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. Biura!
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.